The first raised bed I ever built collapsed on a Tuesday afternoon in late April, and I was standing right there watching it happen. The corner boards I'd used were cheap pine, big box store lumber that I hadn't treated, hadn't braced, hadn't even bothered to think too hard about because I was in a hurry to start growing. 3 weeks after I filled that bed with soil, the boards bowed outward and the whole structure just sort of exhaled, spilling 8 inches of expensive garden mix across my backyard grass in a slow-motion disaster. I stood there watching with a hand shovel in one hand and absolutely no plan in the other. That bed cost me 2 Saturdays, $60 in lumber and $40 in garden mix, and it grew me exactly nothing that season. But it taught me something I've never forgotten. A raised bed that fails to hold its shape cannot grow food. That's the whole thing. The structure is the story. If you get that wrong, you get nothing. So before you drive to the hardware store this weekend, and you can do this, genuinely, this weekend, let me tell you what I've learned about building raised beds that last, that actually hold soil properly, and that will be sitting in your backyard 10 years from now looking better than they did on day one. First, what a raised bed actually is and why it works. A raised bed is simply a contained planting area where you control the growing environment completely. The soil doesn't compact under foot traffic because you never step in it. You work from the sides. The drainage is superior to in-ground planting because you can build the mix to drain perfectly. You warm up faster in spring because the dark soil absorbs heat. You can extend your season on both ends, earlier planting in spring, later harvesting in fall, and perhaps most importantly for newer growers, you can define and improve your soil exactly, filling with what you choose, rather than inheriting whatever chemistry and compaction your native soil has developed over decades. None of this magic happens if the bed is poorly built. So let's talk construction. The best wood for raised beds, and I've now built more than I can count, is cedar. Red cedar resists rot naturally for 15 to 20 years without any treatment. It's beautiful. It smells incredible when you're working with it. It costs more than pine. Yes, but the math works. 2 Saturdays at $12 per board versus 1 Saturday at $30 per board times the number of seasons you'll be using the bed. Cedar wins every time. If cedar is beyond your budget this weekend, use untreated Douglas fir. It will last 5 to 8 years, which is still a useful life, and it won't put chemical treatments into your soil. The pressure-treated lumber you see at every big box store, the greenish stuff, has been improved significantly in recent years, and modern formulations are considered safe by most agricultural extension services. But if you're growing food you want to eat, the peace of mind that comes from not using it is worth the extra few dollars for untreated wood. Board thickness matters more than most beginner guides will tell you. 1-inch thick boards will warp, full stop. 2-inch thick lumber, actual 2x10 or 2x12 boards, which measure 1.5 inches thick, in reality, because of how dimensional lumber works, holds its shape over years of wet soil pressing against it. If you're building a bed that's 12 inches deep, you're using 2x12 boards. If you're building one that's 6 inches deep, you're using 2x6. Don't let a hardware store employee talk you into 1-inch cedar boards because they're cheaper. They're cheaper for a reason. Now the corner brackets. This is the thing I got wrong in my first bed. The corners are where all the structural pressure lives. When you fill a bed with soil and then water it, you are creating a contained mass that is pushing outward in all directions, and the corners are the weak point. You can buy metal corner brackets specifically designed for raised beds, heavy gauge ones, not the flimsy ones, and they will make the build dramatically easier and dramatically stronger. You can also build wooden corner posts. Cut a 4x4 post and use it as the internal corner of each junction, screwing the boards to the post from outside. This is my preferred method for beds I expect to last more than a decade. The corner post is buried a few inches into the ground, which anchors the bed and prevents the bottom boards from kicking outward over time. Width is not negotiable. Your raised bed should be no wider than 4 feet, and 3.5 feet is better if you're shorter or have any reach limitation. This is not an aesthetic rule, it's a practical one. A 4-foot bed means you can reach the center from either side without stepping in. The moment you step in a raised bed, even once, you compact the soil in that footprint and undo some of what the raised bed approach is meant to accomplish. Build narrow enough that you never need to. Length can be whatever you like, honestly, but I'd suggest 8 to 12 feet for a first bed. Shorter, and you don't get much production from it. Longer and moving around, it becomes inconvenient. My favorite beds are 4x8, about 2 sheets of plywood in floor space, and they can reliably grow enough produce to meaningfully supplement a household's food budget through a full growing season if managed with any attention. Let's talk about the one thing that I think causes the most first season failures, and it's not the soil mix, though we'll get there, it's the site selection. People put their raised beds in convenient places, or pretty places, or the only open space they have in their yard, without doing the most basic audit. How much sun does this spot get? Food plants, especially the ones you most want to grow, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, squash, need full sun. That means 6 to 8 hours of direct sunlight per day. Not dappled shade, not morning light that disappears by noon, not reflected light from a bright wall. 6 to 8 hours of actual sun hitting actual leaves. Before you build anything, spend one full day watching the space you've chosen. Watch where the light falls at 8 in the morning, at noon, at 2 in the afternoon, at 5. Walk around the yard if you have to. Find the sunniest spot, then build there. Not in the spot that was easy to dig, not in the spot your husband thought looked nice, in the sun. If you have a location that gets only 4 to 5 hours of sun, you are not done with gardening, but you are limited. Leafy greens, herbs, and root vegetables will tolerate partial shade. Fruiting plants, which are almost always the ones beginners most want to grow, will give you heartbreak in inadequate light. Now soil mix. I've filled beds with everything over the years, and here's the version I've landed on after enough expensive mistakes. The Mel's Mix formula, equal thirds by volume of vermiculite, compost, and peat moss, works extraordinarily well and has a body of evidence behind it going back to Mel Bartholomew's square foot gardening work. The vermiculite keeps it light and ensures drainage. The compost feeds your plants. The peat or coconut coir retains moisture without waterlogging. It's expensive up front, usually $30 to $50 per cubic foot, and a 4x8 bed 12 inches deep needs roughly 32 cubic feet of mix, but it is genuinely the best starting soil you can give a first bed. The cheaper option is to blend topsoil with compost. A 50-50 mix of quality topsoil and aged compost will grow food. It will compact more over time than a soilless mix, but it is significantly less expensive, and for a first bed, it works. What I want you to avoid completely: buying cheap bagged garden soil from a big box store and filling your bed with it. This soil is generally low quality, compacts badly, and is often not what the bag implies it is. Read the label. If it contains primarily wood products, wood composted material, or similar language, it will rob nitrogen from your plants as it breaks down and your seedlings will yellow and struggle. The first few things I plant in every new raised bed are also, intentionally, things that don't demand much from the soil in the first season. Lettuce, radishes, spinach, and herbs will grow in almost anything that drains decently. Save your tomatoes and peppers for the second season, when the soil biology has had time to establish and the bed has proven itself. Watering is the next thing to get right before you plant. A raised bed dries out faster than in-ground soil because it has more surface area and better drainage. In a hot, dry summer, a bed 12 inches deep may need water every 1 to 2 days. This is where a drip irrigation system earns its cost. A basic timer and drip line setup costs $40 to $60 and pays for itself in crop survival within one season. If you're hand watering, water deeply and less frequently. A quick spray across the top of the soil accomplishes almost nothing. Get water 6 to 8 inches down, which means leaving a slow hose on the bed for 5 to 10 minutes, or using a watering can with a gentle rose attachment held close to the soil surface. The garden ghost that hides in nearly every first raised bed is the nitrogen problem. When you first build a bed and add any wood-based amendment, including some composts that weren't fully broken down, you create a slow nitrogen draw as the material continues to decompose. Your plants will look right for 2 or 3 weeks, then they'll start to yellow from the bottom, slowly, looking stressed without any obvious cause. The cause is that the soil organisms breaking down organic material are using nitrogen that your plants need. The fix is to add a balanced organic fertilizer, something with a nitrogen number of 5 or higher, at planting time and again at 4 to 6 weeks. This is the thing that the seed packet doesn't tell you, and that experienced gardeners know without thinking about it. The bed you build this weekend, if you build it with 2-inch lumber, proper corners, full sun, and quality soil mix, will be there next April, and the April after that, and the April after that. It will grow you food that you could not buy at any price in any grocery store, the food that is still warm from the sun when you eat it, the tomato that hasn't been picked green and gassed into redness in a warehouse somewhere, the lettuce that is cold and alive when you cut it. I built my second raised bed the spring after the first one collapsed. I used 2-inch cedar boards. I used 4x4 corner posts, buried 8 inches into the ground. I filled it with a soil mix I'd researched instead of guessed at. It is still standing. It has grown me more food than I can honestly calculate, and more satisfaction than anything else I do in this yard. Start this weekend, and when you're building that first corner, remember, the bed is the commitment, the soil is the beginning. The growing is just what happens when you get those two things right. What's your space situation? Backyard, balcony, somewhere in between? Drop it in the comments, because there's an approach for every kind of outdoor space, and I want to help you figure out yours. One thing that saved me more seedlings than I can count, and that I don't see discussed enough in beginning gardening guides, is the leveling question. Before you build anything, before you set a single board, look at the ground where your bed will sit. Is it level? Even a gentle slope means that water will run to one end of the bed when you irrigate and leave the other end dry. Over a full season, this asymmetry compounds into real production differences. The plants at the wet end may struggle with overwatering and root disease, while the plants at the dry end stress for moisture. Level the ground first. Dig down or build up until a 4-foot level placed on the ground reads flat in all directions. This is not glamorous work. It is the work that makes everything else possible. The question of what to grow in a first raised bed is one I love getting asked because the honest answer surprises people. Start with what you'll actually eat, not what's easy, not what's impressive to show neighbors, what your family will eat. I know a woman who spent 3 seasons growing prize zucchini that nobody in her house liked. I've seen people grow elaborate brassica collections without ever having enjoyed a piece of broccoli in their lives. The raised bed you build this weekend should grow food you are excited to harvest and eat. If you love tomatoes, grow tomatoes. If you use basil constantly in your cooking, grow a lot of basil. The emotional investment in the garden, the daily visits, the careful monitoring, the decision to water even when you're tired, comes naturally when you care about what's growing. For a first 4x8 bed in a full sun location, I'd suggest this layout for a spring start. Plant 2 or 3 determinate tomato varieties at the back of the bed where they won't shade everything else. Fill in the middle with herbs, basil, parsley, chives that you can harvest throughout the season without much maintenance. Use the front row for leaf lettuce or spinach that you'll harvest before the tomatoes close over the canopy. This is a companion planting approach. Loosely, the herbs near tomatoes are thought to improve their flavor and repel certain pests, though I'd honestly grow them together even if the evidence for those benefits were thinner than it is, simply because it makes efficient use of a small space. The first pest you will meet in a new raised bed, and this is guaranteed, not a risk, is the slug. Raised beds, for all their advantages, create a perfect edge habitat that slugs love: moist soil, accessible plants, wooden boards that hold moisture and warmth. You will know you have slugs when you see clean holes in your leaf lettuce and your basil overnight, as if someone took a hole punch to the leaves. The organic intervention that works most reliably is iron phosphate pellets, sold under brand names like Sluggo or Monterey Slug and Snail Bait. Sprinkle them around the perimeter of the bed. They are harmless to birds, mammals, and beneficial insects. They work. The second pest you will meet, if you're growing anything in the brassica family, is the cabbage worm, the larva of the white butterfly you'll see floating around the garden in May and June. Handpick any caterpillars you find on the underside of leaves and drop them in soapy water. If the infestation is heavy, Bacillus thuringiensis, BT, a naturally occurring soil bacteria, applied as a spray, kills caterpillars on contact without harming anything else. I keep a bottle of it on my potting bench from May through September. It's been more useful to me than almost any other garden product. Mulching the top of a raised bed is a practice that I now consider non-negotiable, and it took me 3 seasons of watching beds dry out to convert me. A 2-inch layer of straw or wood chip mulch on top of the soil surface reduces moisture evaporation by 40 to 50% in hot weather, meaning you water less, your soil stays more consistently moist, and your plants spend less time in stress. The mulch also suppresses the weeds that find their way into any bed regardless of how carefully you fill it. Apply it after planting, keeping it away from the immediate base of plant stems. Refresh it once mid-season when it begins to break down. At the end of the first season, after your last harvest, your bed preparation for the following year is simple and high reward. Pull the spent plants, add 2 to 3 inches of fresh compost across the entire surface, and work it gently into the top few inches of your existing soil mix. Add a cover crop, winter rye or crimson clover, scattered on the surface and lightly raked in, if you're in a climate that gets mild winters and you want to continue building soil biology through the cold months. Cover crops grow through fall and early spring, and then you cut them down and turn them into the bed before planting season begins. They add organic matter, they hold the soil in place through winter rains and wind. They are the secret of every garden that somehow looks richer each spring than the spring before. The garden you build this weekend, if you commit to the site selection, the lumber, the corners, the soil mix, and the first season's attentive care, becomes a different thing by year three. The soil biology establishes. The earthworms arrive. The compost you've been adding each year accumulates into a growing medium that is alive in ways your store-bought mix never was. Yields improve without your having done anything dramatically different. The bed rewards continuity in a way that most projects in modern life do not. I want to be honest about one more thing before I let you go get your lumber. This takes work. Not expert-level work, not specialized knowledge work, but sustained attention work. A raised bed garden in full production needs you to visit it every day or every other day through the growing season. You need to see the soil moisture. You need to catch the early pest damage before it becomes crop loss. You need to harvest at the right time because a tomato left on the vine past its peak drops and rots and becomes a pest magnet. The bed will give you back exactly the attention you give it, and a little more. That's the whole proposition. Build something solid, fill it with good soil, grow what you love, pay attention.